Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Hello and welcome to another episode of
Fingers on Buzzers.
Buzzers. I knew where you were going with that. I could join in. So today we are joined by a dream and a delight, a brilliant author, Beth Murray.
Oh, yes, I'm looking forward to this.
And our listeners will love it because Beth is going to give us some insight into the process of creating quiz and game shows because she's now a very successful author, but her background is in television quizzing.
And it's harder than you think to get them even near a pilot.
Yes, there's a lot of failure, there's a lot of heartache in this episode. So
lots of drinking.
And yeah, all of that. So let's hear from Beth. We are very excited to be joined by a wonderful woman, a brilliant author, and just an all-round good egg. It's Beth Murray.
Yay. Hello.
Hello, lovely. Now, you are doing an absolute... doing a storm, is that
it? Yeah, she's doing a right storm.
You're doing incredibly well with all your books. Sunday Times best-selling author of Saving Missy and Em and Me, which are being published in America under different titles because they do that, don't they?
I know, they have very different ideas about what constitutes a good title in the US.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, longer generally. So Saving Missy is called The Love Story of Missy Carmichael, just so people know it's a love story, presumably.
Yes, indeed.
And then Em and Me is published as Delphine Jones Takes a Chance.
Yes. They like names in America. They really like to feature full names.
Yeah, they like to know who they're dealing with.
Yeah. Apparently that was a trend that we went through in the UK. And now I've come out the other side, but they're still in it.
Very good.
That sounds about right, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. We do. You know, we do.
They're slightly behind us.
We're very cutting edge.
And now, the reason we've got you on is to talk to you about quizzing because you have a background in, like, you were involved in television and specifically in game show and quiz show, weren't you?
I was. I was like the secret queen of quiz.
nice.
In a previous life, I was very much a quizzer, or rather a quiz show designer. I went through that time in my life and it was very interesting.
So who did you work for and when, and which shows were you involved with?
So I went into television almost straight out of university, completely by accident. I wanted to work in comedy, but I mean, obviously it's really difficult to get into, but I was applying for everything and I got taken on by someone who wanted a development team to come up with a replacement for Noel's House Party.
Of course. As if you could ever replace Noel's House Party, but...
As if you could.
But that is the traditional route into television, I believe.
Isn't it? What a weird job to get out of university, coming up with the successor to Noel's House Party. So my first job was for Noel Edmonds. I mean, he wasn't around much, but yeah... Essentially, I mean, I can't tell you any good stories about him, really, because I barely met him. The only time I did meet him is he was a sort of early adopter of a Zoom technology. So he liked meeting like on face to face in video calls. And he had some new system of video calls back in what? Was that 2000?
Wow.
99. And it's not as good as Zoom, but. You know, I suppose it was an early version.
That's to us then. Zoom was an ice lolly, wasn't it? We had no idea. But...
we had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, Noel did. Noel saw the future.
Yeah, similes cosmos ordering.
Yeah,
he knew what was coming. So that was my first job working for Noel Edmonds, coming up with that a new house party. But I'd barely got started when he resigned from the BBC, so I sort of was left twiddling my thumbs. So that didn't come to anything, but I'd got the bug then and I was like, oh well, I've started in this and it's not gone well, so I wanted to do it really well. I wanted to get the hang of it, and I worked with some producers there who were like, watch telly, what have you watched, tell me about what you watched and why you liked it. And so I started getting into quiz shows and game shows, and I just was determined that my next job was going to be in that field. And so that's how I started out.
So what were you watching and what were you liking?
Oh, my God, at the time. At the time, honestly, Jonathan Creek.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which isn't a quiz show, obviously.
No. He'd be good in a pub quiz, I think, Jonathan Creek, the character.
Mm. Oh, he'd be amazing.
He'd be very good, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean,
going to put together a fictional pub quiz team.
Oh, now that's a
great idea.
There you go.
Jessica Fletcher.
It's basically all your detectives, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah, you'd have
Detective
Jessica Fletcher, Jonathan Creek.
As well.
I'd have that guy from Medium, you know, the one who can cold read you.
Yes.
Ace in a quiz.
Yeah. Mm. Well, he did just get the answers straight from the quizmaster.
Yeah. Well, I'd have that bloody Richard Osman, wouldn't I?
Yes, I mean, we'd all have him.
I may resent him hugely for its success, but he'd be good on a quiz team.
Well, you never know. He's got it all written down in front of him, hasn't he, on the old pointless.
Yeah, the massive cheat.
Yes.
Yeah, and he wrote the questions.
I'd have Ken Bruce, just so I could sit and share a packet of crisps with Ken Bruce.
Get him drunk.
Anyway, we should probably move on. Let's move on. The restraining order's still in play. So you were watching your telly and you were coming up with quiz ideas. And so tell us about some of the formats that you developed.
While I was at the BBC, I was responsible for kind of looking at their outside formats that were coming in and working out if any of them were worth developing on behalf of the BBC. And none of them were. We looked at so much. It was so rare for outside formats to come in. So mostly it was about just passing things over. Mm-hmm. But I did get involved in a couple of shows there. I designed a lottery show called Everyone's a Winner.
Ooh.
And I honestly can't remember the slightest thing about it, because the thing that was overwhelming when I worked in the BBC entertainment department was we were so drunk all the time. It was just endless.
Yeah.
There's a bar there and there were just parties all the time and like people lying under their desks. And
oh my God. Can you remember who presented Everyone's a Winner at least?
No.
Sounds like Eamon Holmes.
But I do remember I went to a... occasionally you got asked to go to recordings, not the good recordings, like Strictly. Nobody could go to those. But if there was a recording where there wasn't so many people, then you got sort of press ganged. And I went into a show that was presented by Vernon Kay and Tess Daly. And it was like a... It was called something like It Takes Two, something sort of generic like that. And it was like a thing where couples did a singing show. And again, my grasp of the format is really very hazy because I was incredibly ill. I had a really bad cold. And it was quite a fearsome executive producer who'd got us in. And she shouted at us beforehand saying, you guys in the front row, you are not to make a fool of yourselves. You're not to disgrace me. You so much as breathe in the wrong way and you will be out. And I thought, I'm going to cough. I'm going to sneeze and cough.
No.
And I can't stop myself. So I got really drunk in the bar because I thought it would sort of burn off. Burn off the drill. By the time I got to the recording, I was high as a kite.
Oh my gosh.
So and that was like a kind of singing game show.
I've just looked up everyone's a winner. And if rings any bells, Noel Edmonds and Jenny Faulkner.
Oh. No. That sounds very off its time.
That will be a different show. And mine was something like National Lottery. Everyone's a winner.
Oh,
so I reckon there'd be more. We used to call things the same titles all the time.
Well, and Everyone's a Winner, I mean, I'm sure that has been used around the world. No, National Lottery, Everyone's a Winner. TV special 2006.
That would have been after my time, so it would have been an earlier incarnation. Maybe it was a successful format.
Must be. Do you know what? I really think they did a whole day, a live celebration for the National Lottery, for National Lottery Day. You need to go back and demand
and
a bit more money.
Do a bit more
for that. So National Lottery, being drunk at the BBC, where did that lead you next? Did you ever sober up?
Well, the main boss that I worked for moved to RDF Television. They're the makers of Faking It.
Yes.
And she moved and she said, do you want to come with me? And I was quite scared, but I thought, I know if I stay at the BBC, they'll just fire me or they won't renew my contract. I mean, nobody knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And we all sort of left at the same time. Everyone at the BBC left and moved to RDF in sort of one big exodus. And then when I got to RDF, it was like I'd kind of learnt a bit by then and I got a bit better at it after that. So I designed lots of things at RDF. But I guess my first game show that I designed there of note was called The Great Pretender. And that was Chris Tarrant's first game show after Millionaire.
Mm-hmm. So people were expecting a lot.
Yes. At the time, that felt really big.
Yes.
And I was convinced it would make my fortunes. And it's a really clever show. It's so clever. It just didn't really take off.
Isn't that weird? So you still stand by the format, but there was something about it that just didn't quite
timing.
Happen.
Timing can be wrong sometimes.
Possibly. And probably the fact that it was slightly overcomplicated as a format, that you can't sell it very quickly. Story of my life, that. But it's sort of... It's a complicated format to understand. Essentially, it's a game show version, quiz version of Mafia, where you're sort of having to guess who the winner is. So you're watching people answer questions and you're not being told whether they're right or not.
Right.
So it's up to you to judge who's doing well. And then at the end, well, a sort of midway point, somebody gets told, you're the winner. Lucy, you're the winner. And now the only way that you can hold on to the money is if no one guesses that you're the winner.
So good. It was good.
It was a mix of quiz and psychological.
Yeah.
But it was probably a little bit complicated, if I'm honest. Anyway, I think it only ran for one series. So.
But then, you know, many great quiz shows have only run for one series. And in hindsight, you think, you know.
They weren't given a fair crack of the whip.
Yeah. And there's always the possibility that things get resurrected.
I know. Well, it would be nice if ITV would consider it. I mean, I probably wouldn't get any money or any recognition, indeed. But, you know, it deserved more.
It would give you a sense of closure, quite possibly.
Yes. It's the one that got away.
The Great Pretender. Okay, so we've established what went wrong there, more or less. But that wasn't the end of your quiz development, was it?
No, I learned my lesson. Mm. So I realised that when you're designing quizzes, you have to be able to say it in a sentence.
Yes.
And so I thought, right, I'm going to come up with one that can be said in a sentence. And I came up with The Quiz You Play Twice. And then I didn't know what that was, but I had to come up with the premise. And then I designed with that premise in mind, I designed a show called Perfect Recall, which was a quiz you play twice. You play 20 questions, and at the end, you've amassed a bank of answers. And then the bank of answers stay the same, but the questions change.
Mm. Oh, lovely.
Great.
So you're looking at the bank of answers, and then you're trying to remember what you've said and fit one of those answers to the next question. Mm. And that was natty, as the formats go. And then it got taken up by Channel 4, and they said, we want a national treasure to present it. And I said, it has to be Sir Terry of Wogan.
Oh, quite right, too. Oh. Yes.
But I said it as a joke. I didn't think we'd get him. I was like, well, if you want a national treasure, it has to be Tezza. And then we did. We got him. And
it became Terry Wogan's Perfect Recall, didn't it? They even put his name in the title.
Yes, so originally it was Total Recall, like the film, and then they couldn't get the rights for that because we got sued or something. So it became Perfect Recall, which is just a bit shitter. And then Terry agreed to present it, so it became Terry Wogan's Perfect Recall, which is a bit of a gobful, but it still did quite well.
Yeah.
Did all right.
And it's such a good lesson for our listeners, isn't it? If you're trying to come up with something, I think that's such a key point. You just have to be able to explain it in a sentence.
I think what I increasingly realised working in ideas, because I kind of branched out after that, is that it applies to everything, not just TV, but anything in life. You have to be able to explain it really quickly.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's someone like Stephen Hawking said about physics, that if anybody comes up with the big idea for physics, it has to be able to be explained to anyone and anyone can understand it. And I just think that applies. You have to be able to say it quickly and easily. Otherwise, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, but if you're going to tune in and watch something, you don't want to have to put in a lot of effort up front to be able to enjoy it.
No, you want to get it.
You need to start enjoying it, and then you might, like University Challenge.
Yeah.
You're like, there's going to be questions. Oh, they're hard questions, but I'm enjoying them.
I love University Challenge. Yes. I only ever get about two right in an episode, but I still love it.
I know, it's extraordinary, isn't it, that those kind of very hard quizzes endure, because, you know, you would think, oh, people don't want to be made to feel stupid, but people do want to be challenged, don't they?
Well, you want to feel clever for the one question you do get right. Mm. And in fact, I was involved at an early stage with Only Connect.
Oh, wow.
Very early on, I went to a run through because we worked with a sister company who were developing it, and I went to a run through, and I was predictably really shit in the run through. I mean, I don't think I made a single connection, and it shows what I know about television, that I was thinking, God, this is going to go nowhere. It's way too complicated. And at the end, it was like being really polite, going, oh, what a great format. Yeah, this is great. Thinking, that's not going to go anywhere. So obviously, I don't know anything at all.
Well, I think that's the lesson about television, is no one really knows anything, do they? Because the things that take off, sometimes it absolutely baffles you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. But I mean, once it went on air, of course, I sort of saw the... I still can't get any of the answers right, but I can see the sort of glory of it.
So, yes. Yeah. And, you know, the presenter and the graphics and all of the, you know, there is so much that goes into a quiz or a game show, isn't there?
So I mean, the levels of thought and care and endless run-throughs. And we had this format term that we used in development called quizzle sticks, which was for if you come across a point in the format that doesn't quite work and you put in another rule on top to try and accommodate that. I mean, it just means it's not very good is the answer. But we were forever trying to add quizzle sticks and then realizing, no, if you have to add quizzle sticks, then it doesn't work. But the level of detail and hard work that goes into designing a format is, you know, it's really backbreaking because it's hard.
And were you involved in, you know, graphics and music and the choices of all those things and set, or were you just pure format?
Not really in that side of things. I suppose if I'd had designs on that bit of production, that I may have been able to push. But I was into, you know, hence Terry Wogan, I was really into the idea of casting of the person who hosted it having a particular kind of gravitas and tone that suited the format. And I still think that's really important. Mm. But the rest of it, I was quite happy to leave to the experts.
Yeah.
And again, when you get that look and that theme tune and it's just right, I mean, I may not be able to do it myself, but I can recognise it in, you know, other in other people. And I very much admire the people who are doing that.
It is an absolute team effort, isn't it?
Yes.
Any quiz. I mean, and there's all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people, you know, people never know about, like the question setters and verifiers. And, you know, there is a whole world behind the scenes, which we always try and sort of illuminate. And it's
been like the curtain a little.
Yes. And I think it's been brilliant talking to you, Beth, because that has given us a real insight into what it's like designing.
And what it was like at the BBC in the early 2000s.
What it's like designing quiz shows whilst drunk.
I mean, that's how we tend to do it anyway, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not like... When I was working in development later, and I don't know whether it's because like by that point I was nearly 40 and, you know, I was just at a different time in my life. But we were in the early years of development when it has just got started and just being professionalised. And so it was a bunch of 20-somethings who didn't know what the hell they were doing working it all out. And I guess by the time development had come on a lot, there were a lot more older people doing it and probably, I don't know, maybe they're still at the BBC getting really drunk. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I'd like to think so. There's been a few shows they've done recently that would explain
all
that.
There is a small corner of BBC, which is forever the bar.
Well, that makes me feel quite warm inside.
Yes, long way
really good
continue. Oh, well, obviously, you know, you have changed career with great success. But do you ever watch any quiz shows now, or is that sort of a part of your life you've left behind?
To a certain extent, it is. Every now and then I do watch University Challenge because I sort of imagine, in the same way that when I go to the hairdressers, I think that when I come out, I'm going to be a different person. When I watch University Challenge, I sort of always imagine that somehow I'm just going to like become this really, really clever person as I watch it, and then just suddenly turn over this new leaf where I can answer all the questions.
Yeah.
And I always enter into it in that way. But, you know... it doesn't happen. And I do like Pointless, even though, again, I'm massively jealous because we designed that the exact same show at the same time that Endemol designed it. And I'm not sure that we called it the same thing. I think we had a different title, but the format was exactly the same. And
wow.
We pitched it at exactly the same time and they won. And so like, ouch. But for a quirk of fate, I could be Richard Osman.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I could be selling millions of books as well instead.
Well, you're selling a lot of books. Let's not, you know.
Not to be sniffed at.
No, exactly. And is he really happy? I mean, yes, he is very, very
is,
happy. But, but let's gloss over that.
It's a clever format.
It's a clever format, and your one would have been great too. But, you know, sliding doors moments and all that. And we are now all going to go and try and find out what that lottery programme was.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I wish I could remember it. But
I mean, I have found out what the Vernon K programme was.
Oh, what was that?
It was just the two of us.
That's it! Yes.
And it was a celebrity and sort of a pro singer doing
strictly,
duets.
Strictly, but for singing.
Yeah, and one of the judges was Stuart Copeland from The Police.
Gosh.
Was it?
Wow. I mean...
that's amazing.
Come on.
There might have been another judge that I auditioned. I certainly used to audition judges occasionally for the BBC.
Yeah, well, the judges were Stuart Copeland, Trevor Nelson and CC Sammy, who once was my vocal coach when I did a show called Let's Sing and Dance for Comic Relief.
Oh.
A lot of those kind of Saturday night shows.
Oh, and I can't take credit for any of those, but I did audition judges in the past, so you never know.
Lulu, she was a judge.
I love Lulu.
I love Lulu.
Well, in fact,
I saw her backstage that night, and she looked fucking good.
I know.
God.
I want to know, what is that secret formula? Because she buried something at a crossroads at midnight.
She looked amazing. I think it's really, really judicious Botox, like really, really careful.
Yeah.
She looked incredible.
Or just natural Scottish water.
That's it.
Now, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you very much for
inviting
me.
reading all your books and buying way more of those than we do of Richard Osman.
I've bought zero Richard Osman books. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, I'd like to outsell him 2-1. Thank you.
We'll make that happen. Okay. So, Beth, before we let you go, we have a little quiz that I have compiled about literary women, because you are a literary woman.
No, literary.
So I'm going to give you some quotes. They are by women writers, and you just have to tell me which woman writer it is.
Okay. I'm nervous.
So this is a early 20th century novelist. Mrs. Ramsay did in her own heart infinitely prefer boobies to clever men who wrote dissertations.
Oh,
it's
good work, Mrs. Ramsay.
Yes. So this is.
What did you say? Early 20th century?
Yes.
So boobies.
Yeah, I just liked it because it had the word boobies in it, I'll be honest. So the novel in which this is housed was published in 1927.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's a novel that centres on the Ramsay family and their visits to the Isle of Skye in Scotland between 1910 and 1920.
Ramsay family. Well, if it's... I mean, I would think like a Mitford or someone like that, but boobies is flummoxing me.
It may help you to know that the cover art was done by Vanessa Bell.
Oh, yeah.
So would that be Virginia Woolf?
It would. It's from To the Lighthouse.
She used the word boobies.
She used the word boobies.
I'm shocked.
I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay, this one. Again, we're in the later part of the 20th century. And this is from a book of essays by a woman who was famous for writing romantic comedies and romantic comedy films. And the quote is, "Oh, how I regret not having worn a bikini for the entire year I was 26. If anyone young is reading this, go right this minute, put on a bikini and don't take it off until you're 34. Who could have said that? I'll give that to you again, Beth.
Was it someone like Nora Ephron?
It was indeed Nora Ephron.
Brilliant.
Here's one we're going a bit further back in time. This is from a very famous novel. "I hate to hear you talk about all women as if they were fine ladies instead of rational creatures. None of us want to be in calm waters all our lives." And that is from a novel that was written or published, in fact, in the year. Oh, it's just been adapted on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hang on then. I know what it is.
And published in 1817.
Would it be Persuasion?
It would be Persuasion.
Have you seen the trailer?
It's had some interesting reviews.
Oh, that's
they've tried to cross Jane Austen with Fleabag.
Fleabag.
Oh, God. I mean, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
Poor Jane Austen.
I'm going to give you a poem now.
Oh.
Okay. Or a fragment of. "Pretty women wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model's size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me." I mean, it's
such
all
a
true.
Great poem. So
good.
I have a book which is by the side of my bed, which is called The Poetry Pharmacy. So you can look up any condition you're going through and find a poem that's going to help you deal with it. It's so good. And that is one of them. And it's, you know, just amazing and for your self-esteem.
Yes. Any ideas, Beth, or do you want to hand it over?
Well, you know, don't you?
I think so. I hope I get the right one.
I don't know. I mean, I'd guess someone maybe like Pam Ayres, but I don't know. I just don't know.
She is very much the American Pam
Ayres. She's the American, yeah. Is it Maya Angelou?
It is Maya Angelou, yes. The American Pam Ayres, as we should know. And finally, this one is from a young adult novel of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And the quote is simply, we must increase our busts.
Yes. Oh, yes. I loved this book.
It just makes me think of Judy Blume.
Yes. And you're right to do so. It is.
Are you there? God, it's me, Margaret.
Absolutely.
Oh. Is it from that? Yes. Oh, my yes. God, I love that book. I read a lot of hers, but yeah, it just suddenly comes back to you.
Yeah, a classic. Oh, well, yes. Well done. That was a very good showing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Beth Murray, it's been such a pleasure. We love you.
Thank you very much. That was lovely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So now we have a listener quiz. Amanda, may we invite you in?
I'd love to come in. Thank you. Like a vampire, I've been invited in. There's no getting rid of me.
Open the window.
And she's hungry. And so is Laura Ings, who has written us a lovely quiz. Really great set of questions, which I'm just going to launch into. And there's a link to all of them, which we'll get to. But question number one, what is unique about Mickey Mouse's start on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Oh, this is a great question. Thank you, Laura.
Oh, hello.
Right. Ooh. Okay. So size, shape, way it's signed. I'm doing my thinking out loud here. You're, I don't know if we're competing.
We seem to be approaching.
Should we collaborate?
Team.
Yeah, let's do it.
Is it bigger than everyone else's? Because he's massive. He's Hollywood himself, isn't he? Mr. Mouse.
I'm now picturing him as like King Kong, bestriding the...
Is it the location?
It could be. It could be height or, you know...
Is it very, very small, like a mouse?
Yeah, maybe. And it's like in the wall, like Jerry's mouse hole in Tom and Jerry.
No, that would be appropriate for Jerry
That'd
Mouse.
Be appropriate
but
for
I
Jerry
mean,
mouse,
I don't
but...
know, Mickey Mouse kind of strides about that Disney World place, doesn't he?
Different colour. Different colour. It could be gold. I mean, what are they, this sort of concrete-y colour?
Shall I let you know that you...
Yeah, I think the listeners have suffered enough.
Well, it's the only cartoon character on the Walk of
Fame.
Really?
Yes.
I can't believe that. Shrek?
Oh, God, imagine how jealous Minnie would be.
Oh, it's the typical story of the woman being written out.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Patriarchy, damn you.
Thanks, Mickey. So, to question two, which children's comic included the lesser-known characters Pansy Potter, Little Plum, Lord Snooty and Baby Face Finlayson?
It's the Beano, that.
Yeah, Lord Snooty.
Sure.
Lovely. Yeah, absolutely. Question number three. Which of William Blake's Songs of Experience poems is the sister poem to The Lamb from Songs of Innocence?
Tiger? That's one of his, isn't it?
It is one of his.
That would be like a contrast, wouldn't it, to a lamb?
The lamb and the tiger.
Tiger, tiger, burning bright.
Yeah, the tiger. Absolutely. You're going great guns here, guys. We've only got...
We got past the Mickey Mouse.
Mouse?
Farrago.
I love the way that you were like, is it just a little tiny bit in a wall?
That'd be a great tourist attraction.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it? That would be brilliant. Yeah, that would be the 9.5... weeks, I was going to say, the platform 9 3/4, I meant.
Yes.
Kings Cross, yeah. Question number four, moving swiftly on. Who was the Archbishop of Canterbury from 1583 to 1604, known for his ostentatious habits and controversial views?
Mickey Mouse. Is it? Well, it's an animal theme then, maybe.
Well, no, with a bee now. Oh, we have a question about Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, it's not an animal theme. I'm gonna send you. I'm gonna give you a clue that not to go down that the animal path. Yeah.
What were those years again, please?
1583 to 1604.
Well, so it's after your Thomas More type of era. Mm. It's post. It's
what was happening then?
It's Elizabeth I.
Yes.
Who did she have? Was it Lord Melchett?
Yes, casting our minds back to Blackadder.
It was Lord Darling. No, it was John Whitgift.
Oh, the Whitgift Centre.
Oh, where's that?
Croydon.
Oh, Croydon. Oh, no, blimey,
you
know,
the minute you say Whitgift, I'm like, yes,
it's the
Centre.
Theme Croydon.
We'll get to that. So, question number five. What flower from one of the two largest families of flowering plants with the Latin name? Bloody hell, Laura, what have you done
to me?
That's
not Latin.
Thelmitra crinteat. Sorry, I've had a lot of wine. Found in southwest Australia and New Zealand, represents rarity and beauty because of its unusual colour.
Oh, black rose, white, no.
Like chrysanthemum or something? Because it was.
No, I'm trying to think what. This is Australian.
I think it might be, if it's Croydon related, I think it might be the Blue Orchid.
What's a Blue Orchid?
Croydon's premier nightclub of the 80s and 90s, and the scene of so many of my teenage heartbreaks.
Found in the borough of Croydon.
So let's recap. So definitely the Whitgift Centre, yeah. Definitely the Blue Orchid.
Tiger.
I mean, there's lots of places with a tiger, but none like Croydon's. I tell you, that was one of the. And the Beano Records. Beano Records was one of the best record shops of all time.
Called like Mickey and Minnie's or something.
I'm trying to think what Mickey Mouse or Mickey. That's the only one that I'm not 100% sure.
The cartoon, it says here.
Oh, the cartoon! Oh my goodness, the cartoon, one of the best ever live music venues. This has just.
Is Laura from Croydon, by any chance?
Well, also, Laura says that John Whitgift is also buried in Croydon, hence the name of the shopping centre.
Oh, there you go. And there's a school called Whitgift School as well.
Places you would have hung out. Oh,
this is just absolute. I'm going to be weeping now thinking about all my wasted youth. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Laura. That was brilliant. And you've taken me on a trip down memory lane, and you provided a brilliant quiz. So thank you so much. Well, thank you so much to Beth Morrie for a fantastic interview, and to Laura for probably my favourite ever listener quiz. I'm going to be partial here because it was about Croydon and it mentioned the Blue Orchid.
She's both weeping and salivating at the same time, which is a remarkable feat.
I've really...
Dehydrating right in front of
me. I mean, everything's oozing out of me because I'm just so moved. So that was lovely. Thank you. And thank you for listening. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Lucy. You don't get thanked enough.
I don't need to be thanked. I get to remember the Blue Orchid. None of you were there.
We'll never know.
You'll never know what happened. And we will see you next time for another episode of...
Fings and Buzzes.
Fings and Buzzes. They used to play that in the Blue Orchid all the time.
Oh, God, I bet they did. Jeez.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman, with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz at fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet at fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.